Thanks to our new partner, Tifosi Optics, maker of my favorite sunglasses. The folks at Tifosi design sunglasses that allow you to get out and live your passion, which is why I wear Tifosi sunglasses running, playing pickleball, and strolling around town. Get 20% off with code AMR20 at TifosiOptics.com. Welcome to another Mother Runner. This is Sarah Bowen Shea. I'm joined today by Tish Hamilton. Hello, Tish.
Hello, Sarah. How are you today?
Good, and happy spring break for your kids, although your spring break is next week.
Yeah, they don't align. They don't align. And and how about your kids?
Yes. So, and we are recording this on Thursday, March 14th. So bear that in mind when we're saying next week and things like that. So, yes, my son John got home last Friday night, and he flies home on Saturday night, flies back to school. This is home. And and then his twin sister Daphne took the bus down from Seattle University here to Portland last night, so picked her up down there. So yeah, so I'm really really glad they overlap.
Yeah, so they got to see each other, but their spring breaks don't align perfectly either.
Correct. Yes. And Seattle University is on the quarter system. So it sort of, she just she only had a final and a presentation in her drawing class. So she, you know, could have varied when she would have gotten out. So she got out on Wednesday. So I'm just glad that they overlap by a few days.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the school that I work at is also on the quarter system. Mm-hmm. And my daughter's in a semester system. So our schedule's never quite completely line up, but
yeah,
but that's okay.
Yes. Well, and it must feel very spring breaky down there in Savannah.
It does. It's very spring like. Savannah's actually showing off its most beautiful weather this week. I'm so glad that my daughter is here to appreciate it. It's been sunny and low humidity, which is a very rare beast. and the trees are all blooming and you know, that pretty light green of floral, you know, the trees beginning to, leaves beginning to come out. It's really pretty.
Yes.
And also we are coming up on St. Patrick's Day, as as you know, March 17th. Mm-hmm. Right, so it's a Sunday this year, and here in the South, we don't do parades on Sundays.
So that's interesting.
So it's on Saturday.
Oh my gosh, here you'd be thinking, woohoo! The actual holiday lands on a Sunday. Nope.
It would interfere with church.
Yes.
So, Savannah has I didn't know this until I moved here, but Savannah has a huge St. Patrick's Day celebration. Oh. I mean, it's really big. Oh. They can't say it's the biggest in the country because New York is probably bigger just because there are more people in New York City.
Right.
Uh-huh. And Boston might be also, but
yes.
I bet you in terms of like population to parade, Savannah would win that contest because it takes over the whole city. It's amazing. I have never been, so I'm very excited to go this year.
Oh.
And it's also the 200th anniversary of the first parade here in Savannah.
So, and have you looked into the history? I mean, I don't, when I think Savannah, I don't immediately think strong Irish heritage.
I know, me neither. That was a question I asked my students. I'm like, is there a strong Irish heritage here? Or is it just a party excuse?
And the kids were like, we need to have an excuse.
No, Savannah is definitely ready to take on any opportunity for a party. And my students answered both. It's both. It's definitely a party opportunity, but there is a big Irish heritage here, and it was pre-Civil War potato famine, sort of the same thing that caused a lot of folks from Ireland to move to New York and Boston, right, during opportunity to work. And Savannah is a port city.
Yes.
So Irish laborers came here and built a lot of things.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And I saw some stat, and we need to fact check me, but I saw some stat that at one point, like 1 in 3 Georgians were of Irish heritage.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, so go figure. Hmm.
So our neighborhood has a very modest St. Patrick's Day parade, and it is held on. So it will be held on Sunday here in the heathen north, and it was started by a family. And it is just so homespunny. It's fabulous. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, like Portland's Irish Wolfhound Club.
Oh.
You know, walk with their dogs. And then just all sorts of, definitely all sorts of breeds of dogs. A fire truck. Oftentimes the Oscar Mayer Wiener truck comes through. Not all sure right. what that has to do with Patrick's Day.
Do you need a reason?
And then, you know, some old timey cars, people pull those out of the garage and
yeah.
you know, drive super slowly. And there's a senior women's group that does a kind of baton twirling and certainly bagpipes,
right,
and things like that. The not the Knights of Columbus. Oh, the Rosarians here in Portland. We are the Rose City. And so there's a group that really loves roses, and they are the Rosarians. So they march in cream colored suits and top hats.
Awesome.
Yes.
So
and lots of candy tossing.
I was just going to ask you about that. Is it a candy parade?
Yeah.
That's what we called them in the town that my daughter grew up in. The candy parade. Let's go to the candy parade.
Oh my gosh. One year when my older daughter, Phoebe, who lives in Portland, so she doesn't come home for spring break. So I didn't want to overlook her in our earlier conversation, which I did. So when she was quite a young child and we went to it, and she just, I don't know, it's a really small timey parade. I don't want to use the term rinky dink because I adore it and it really fills me with a lot of joy. But she was just kind of meh, whatever. But then when they started tossing candy, she's like, oh yeah. This is awesome.
Now I get it. Yeah.
So then we like walked after the parade went by, we walked where the parade had come from to scoop up candy that had not been picked up.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm familiar with that.
Who cares that it's in a mud puddle? Yeah. It's in wrapper. It's Laffy Taffy. It's yeah, totally right. sealed.
It's Starburst. Right. Yeah.
So, and it's fun because it goes, I don't know, maybe 10 blocks and then it heads east to west for 10 blocks and then goes north a block and then comes back. So you can stand on one block, watch it go by, and then dilly-dally, take your time walking that one block north, and then, oh, here it comes again. So get to see it all over again.
Go see this. And I'm sure it's all about seeing the old-timey cars and not about getting candy tossed at you.
And trying to find some green in my wardrobe. I just have very few pieces of green clothing.
Yeah, you know, I had that conversation with my daughter, Nina, who's here, and she's like, I don't have any green. I'm like, well, let's buy you a green t-shirt. We got to, I think we can find a green t-shirt for like $10.
Right. Or Goodwill will have one. Yeah.
That's a good idea. Although at this point, it's probably,
picked Goodwill's, over.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, this is truly a big deal because, you know, it's a 200th anniversary. It's on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. Just like, that's like the perfect, you know, confluence of events to, yes. for, and I mean, truly it's a big deal here in Savannah, and it's felt like it's been St. Patrick's Day for the past 2 weeks. Like,
oh my
everybody
gosh.
Downtown's wearing green. There are events every other day.
Wow.
I read something like in the local newspaper that some local booster person said that the hotels are at like 99% capacity.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
Pull out all the stops.
Truly.
The
truly.
Smell of corned beef hangs in the air. Bleh, bleh, bleh. Oh my gosh. I'm sorry, but I can't stand. Can't stand that smell.
Yeah, me neither.
Well, all right, Tish, we are not here just to talk about St. Patrick's Day. We are talking about recovery today and the importance of rest and recovery in athletic training. We have a repeat guest and a longtime friend of the pod, Sage Roundtree, PhD, a recovery coach for various athletic teams, including the Charlotte Hornets. A longtime yoga instructor, Sage is well known as an expert in yoga for athletes, and she's an endurance sports coach, as well as a yogini and endurance athlete herself. Sage is an author of numerous books, including the just released second edition of The Athlete's Guide to Recovery, Rest, Relax, and Restore for Peak Performance. She's also the mother of two nearly grown daughters. Welcome back to the show, Sage. It's lovely to be talking with you after too long.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So Sage, set the stage for us by telling us about your athletic background as a runner and a practitioner of yoga, please.
Sure. I came up as a couch potato en route to getting my PhD in English literature, which involved a whole lot of time sitting on the sofa reading books. But in the early years of my marriage, we had a very large chocolate lab who needed a bunch of exercise. So I would take him into the woods and let him off the leash so he could kind of get his wiggles out. And then he would run off and I'd have to run to catch him. And then I found myself actually enjoying the running part of that experience. Well, I took him every chance I got to take him with me. I also sometimes would just go out and run on my own, which in the early years of motherhood was a real blessing. Like I would get up and nurse the baby and then head out for a little bit before my husband had to go to work. And it was my me time. So that became super important to me. And at the same time I had begun practicing yoga, I hated the first couple experiences I had with yoga. Which looking back, like that makes sense. You have to kind of explore to find the right style and the right teacher for you. But prenatal yoga was the best because my best friend was also pregnant. We would go to prenatal yoga together and it was so sweet. Mm. So when I was running more and more, those early morning runs after nursing the baby and before my husband went to work, my body started to hurt. And I thought, well, it felt so nice to be doing yoga when I was pregnant. Maybe I need to get back to yoga. And then it really clicked for me that yoga and endurance sports would make a wonderful complement to each other. And I became a yoga teacher and an endurance sports coach and wound up, as Sarah said, writing several books on the intersection between yoga and endurance sports.
Cool. And you have also got a lot of accomplishments as a runner, including running Boston more than once, I think. And
just once. It was so perfect that I was never going to do it again. It was so perfect. I went with my mom, who went to college in Boston, and it was the, 2008, where they ran the women's Olympic trials the day before. And that was so exciting to witness. And I had a great day, requalified in that race. And then I was like, yeah, take a good look around because it's not getting any better than this. So that was my one and only Boston experience.
Wow. So to requalify and then walk away from it, that is, I admire that.
Yeah, me too. Go out on a high note.
Sometimes you just know it really isn't going to get any better than this.
All right, Sage, tell us about a typical week of workouts for you. From something you mentioned to me earlier, I get the sense that you no longer run. Is that the case?
That is true. My ankles began to get five steps too cranky. I mostly run on trails. I live on the edge of the forest here in North Carolina, and I have rolled each of them so many times, it isn't even funny. But I started to notice a year or two ago on days that I ran, which at that point was maybe just 3 or 4 days a week, that if I sat down to work at my desk or better yet to sit in the recliner and read a mystery novel, when I got up, my ankles would be so angry at me and they would be really painful and I'd kind of be hobbled for the first 20 or 30 steps. And so I began to experiment with not running and instead walking. And I came to realize that walking, whether on my own or with my husband or my girlfriends, is giving me about 90% of what I was getting from running. And I can think a little bit better because I'm not paying attention to the rocks and roots on the trails in quite the same way. And my ankles are happy. So every day I go for a long walk, 90 minutes, 2 hours, and I lift weights and I go to Pilates. I also teach Pilates, but that doesn't count as my exercise. Well, it is exhausting. It is my exercise. And I go to yoga and sometimes I do less physical yoga, maybe just some meditation or some breath exercise. But every day has got some walking, some mindful movement, and some kind of sitting still and paying attention.
Nice. So, and how was that to let go of running?
It's surprisingly just fine.
I know you sound so blind about it.
it was fine. And I hurt less. So I had, this incentive to experiment and find ways to feel even better in my body. But I hadn't been competing for quite a while. So there wasn't a sense of missing out. I have proved everything that I ever needed to prove to myself through my racing. So it's just a question for me of finding ways to feel good all day long. And the walk itself is part of it. And the way that the walk leaves me feeling after is also part of it.
And so your ankles are no longer angry at you?
No, and neither is my washing machine, because I don't sweat all that much when I walk. So I can wear yesterday's yoga clothes when I walk, which is awesome. Think of all the water I'm saving.
It's now when I admit that I'm wearing last night's pickleball outfit because I'm playing later this afternoon. So, you know, I didn't sweat all that much in it. So
totally.
So I hear you. I like that. Yeah. All right. So, okay. So you're no longer running, but back when you were running, you told us with beautiful specificity that your personal time to get the, now I'm running feeling was 18 minutes and 30 seconds, not 15, not 20 minutes. No, 18 minutes and 30 seconds. So, you know, that by that time you'd be feeling good. So, and if you didn't, you told yourself you could bail, but you never or rarely bailed on a run. So can you talk a bit about this approach to going on a run for folks who might also be struggling and maybe don't reach that 18 minutes and 30 second mark or need to realize they need to find their own time frame?
That cracks me up that you know that. I don't quite remember saying that, but that does sound like something I would have said.
Oh, very good. Because it's when I was like, okay, I got to find my old notes from when we've talked to Sage. So thankfully I don't use the word Sage very often, so that when I searched in my computer, I found the previous interview with you, interview notes.
I love it. I love it. That totally tracks. And I also don't remember ever bailing at the 18 and 30 second mark. So that's mm-hmm. good too, right? Yeah. You know, I've been reading a whole lot on habits. My business partner and I are working up an at-home yoga retreat course. And a part of that is helping people like reset their habits and find better ways to form habits. And two of the three top books on building habits both talk about just creating either tiny or atomic habits. Those are the two titles, Tiny Habits by BJ Fogg and Atomic Habits by James Clear. And in each of them, they say you want to make the habit as tiny as possible so that you can do it. Like Tiny Habits, BJ Fogg says, you just need to floss one tooth. Just tell yourself you're going to floss a single tooth. And in Atomic Habits, James Clear talks about just do it for 2 minutes. Like go to the gym for 2 minutes. I can't imagine once you've right. taken the time to get there, you're going to turn mm-hmm. around after 2 minutes. But he says sometimes you even just need to leave after 2 minutes and work on the 2 minute part for several mm-hmm. weeks before you start to stay longer, which, hey, respect. If you have the willpower to stop after 2 minutes, that's pretty impressive too. But it's mm-hmm. so it's the same concept, right? That intention and mood follow action. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hey, we know as housekeepers, if we waited until we felt ready to do everything until we were in the mood, the house would be squalid. Nothing would ever get done. So we have to start the motion before we feel like starting the motion. And that's definitely what I would have meant back in the day. I was like, let's just give it 18 minutes and 30 seconds. But I think what I also meant was I could always just kind of feel like at that point, the endorphins were kicking in. I was sweating. I was, you know, a mile and a half from home. So mm-hmm. by then it was like, okay, I guess this run is happening now.
Yes.
So Sage, you recently put out a second edition of The Athlete's Guide to Recovery. And I understand Sarah gave a blurb, back cover blurb on it. And the first edition came out in 2011. So I'm curious about what prompted you to put out the second edition?
When that first book came out, the first edition came out in 2011, it was one of the first, if not the first book, specific to the most recent thinking on the science of athletic recovery. And what I like to say is when I'm talking about athletic recovery, I'm talking about rest. I'm talking about all the things you do when you're not working out. So sometimes I say I am the expert in not working out because that really is where your adaptations are happening. At the end of your workout, at the end of your run, at the end of your walk, you're feeling more tired and slower if you did it right. If you applied enough of a stress stimulus to your body to encourage your body to adapt, you're going to be tired and worn out at the end. And you need to then give yourself the time to integrate what you did for your body to determine what it's going to do in case it gets presented with a stimulus like that in the future. And that's all what's happening when you are resting and recovering. But since 2011, there's been a ton more research. on the ways that we can recover. There's a huge quantum leap in the amount of data that we can collect about our bodies using devices, wearable devices like the Apple Watch or the Oura Ring or your Whoop tracker or, I don't know, some kind of mattress pad that tracks your sleep or whatever it is. wearable clothes that track your sleep. I guess all clothes are wearable by definition, but some have trackers built into them. I mean, it's just crazy the amount of hardware that we could be using to collect data. Now, the data really hasn't come along, and not all of these devices actually do a good job at collecting the data, and we're not quite sure what to make of all the data, but we have a lot more information than we used to about what's going on in our bodies as we rest and recover than we did in the early 2010s. And was just ready to take another look at the research. The other big jump in the field has been that folks are more aware of the importance of recovery, and Instagram is more able to tell you how many devices you ought to be spending your money on in order to enhance your recovery. So we take a look at all of that in this new second edition, which came out last week.
So you mentioned all the devices and things like that. Do you think that athletes and runners have they gotten smarter about rest and recovery in the decade plus since that first edition of your book came out? Or do you think they're just kind of in this soup of data and just kind of making it up as they go along?
It's a yes and a no. I think, yes, people are better aware now than they were even just 13 years ago of how rest matters, how often less is more, how you can't really eke out those last few drops toward peak performance if you are running yourself into the ground or if you haven't had adequate time to adapt and recover. But we also have this glut of information, like I said, and all these tools, each one, more shiny and pricey than the previous one, and recovery studios that will happily take your money and put you in a cryotherapy chamber and stretch you out for you. And there are lots of ways that you can drain your wallet, but they don't necessarily equate to recovery.
And as you say, there is like a glut of information and misinformation out there now. So if there was one myth you could bust about athletic recovery, what would it be?
Well, this is one of the major reasons that I was so excited to get the opportunity to write a second edition to this book, is that the thinking about ice baths has changed immensely in the last decade or so. In fact, even since when I was drafting this book last year and I was starting to say, hey, y'all, we better take a more careful look at whether ice baths are really doing what we think they're doing for our recovery. And even since then, there's been more evidence that they truly aren't. So my take on ice baths at this point is that ice baths are hazing. And like many hazing modalities, they are things that happen to the people who make us submit to them back when they were coming up. And your coach says, well, this was something I had to do, so therefore it's something that you're going to have to do. And it can be bonding, like hazing activities can be. And it can also be dangerous, like hazing activities can be. So the trick with ice baths is that they feel like they work, right? None of us want to believe that we're suffering for no reason, but they don't work in the way that we think that they do, at least in the specific narrow way of enhancing our recovery or speeding our recovery. And often at this point, people would say, yeah, but ice bath is like teaching me how to do hard things and how to, eat the frog or whatever. I guess I sound like such a bro when I say that. To which I would say,
Joe Rogan in the house.
Bro. But if you are training to perform at your best, why aren't you getting that kind of stress stimulus in your workouts? It's called the principle of specificity. So if you're training to be, the bro who is on Instagram, which looks very exciting when he takes his shirt off and gets in the ice bath and he's so tough and manly, if that's what you're training for, then ice bath is wonderfully specific training. Training to run a marathon or a 5K or just to feel more happy in your body and better balanced in your body, ice bath ain't it. It's not going to help with that. It's just going to impose more suffering on you. And life is suffering. Like, why are we looking for more?
I feel so validated right now and taking a hard pass on ice baths.
Take a warm bath, put some bubbles in it, you know, put a bath bomb in there, play your classical music playlist. So, like, you're gonna get the same amount of hydrostatic therapy, right? The water pressure is good for your recovery. The temperature, no, that's not helping.
Oh my goodness. That was the most fabulous rant on ice baths ever. All right, it's time for a short break to hear from some supporting sponsors. Stay with us for more sage advice on rest and recovery. Portland gets a bad rap about being rainy and cloudy, but au contraire, my friends, I get plenty of wear out of my Tifosi Optics sunglasses, running, playing pickleball, hiking, driving, and dog walking. Tifosi sunglasses are so durable, affordable, and high quality. Tifosi's shatterproof polycarbonate lenses are scratch resistant and they reduce glare. What I love best about Tifosi glasses is their premium polarization. They provide stunning clarity. At this time of year, I feel they allow me to see and almost count every leafy bud on the trees. I also really appreciate that the Tifosi glasses with fun colored lenses, like Smoke Rose Mirror and Smoke Bright Blue, let me see the world the way it actually looks without distorting it like some similarly priced shades do. As I mentioned, Tifosi glasses are super high quality. Tifosi Glide technology allows the frame to slide on comfortably and provide an anti-bounce fit. Hydrophilic rubber nose pads provide more grip the more you sweat, so the glasses stay secure during even your most intense activities. Last weekend on my 8-mile run, my Tifosi Swanks, one of Tifosi's most popular models, stayed in place perfectly and they were comfortable the entire way. See for yourself. Get 20% off Tifosi sunglasses with code AMR20 at TifosiOptics.com. Again, get 20% off Tifosi sunglasses using code AMR20 at TIFOSIOptics.com. That's AMR20 at TifosiOptics.com. Okay, rest and recovery can sound like such a passive endeavor. So, Sage, explain, please, why taking a rest day isn't just about lounging around with our feet up.
Well, it can be. And in fact, the harder you're training, the more important that day of total rest might become. So back in the day when I was training for marathons, for Ironman, for ultra marathons, I would take Sunday off and I would literally just lie on the sofa and watch football with my feet up and feel really happy about doing it. So there certainly is a time and a place for that. But your rest day or your recovery could also be taking the time to find balance in your life by doing the laundry. There's active recovery right there, or hanging out with your kids or your partner or your friends or just with yourself to get some mental downtime as well. Because it's in those quiet periods where your body is making its performance gains, where it's growing stronger in response to all the stresses that you've put on it and that life has put on it over the course of the week. So don't feel embarrassed or guilty about lunging around with your feet up if you can. But it's also just a day to let your well refill without obsessively thinking about your training plan or your race goals.
So, Sage, I'm so glad you mentioned Ironman, because I have lived with an Ironman. I have a best friend who's done Ironman, my favorite podcast co-host, who that would be Sarah Bonche, who was on an exercise streak for many, many years. And some people just can't see their way to taking a rest day. So one of my friends, like, I'll say, did you work out today? And she'll, oh, no, it's a rest day. All I did was swim for 30 minutes. And I'm like, well, that's not a rest day. So how do you say to folks who can't see their way to take a rest day? Like, what do you say to them?
Well, it's the phrase that anybody else from the South will know. Bless your heart. Bless your heart. you haven't heard the good news that a rest day is really where the gains are happening. And you have to have some faith that it will make you faster and stronger. And until you cannot force people to believe, right? Rest is coming for you. You can choose to take it on your own terms, or you can try to push it off as long as possible. But just like you can't stay awake indefinitely, you can't streak indefinitely. Like, at some point you will die. At some point you will get sick or you will get injured. it can be very empowering to choose to stop here. Like you said, it wasn't like I really walked away like at the peak of my athletic ability, but I was like, yeah, you know, it's not going to get better for me racing the Boston Marathon than that one experience I had. So why not take it on your own terms? And why not say, you know, every Sunday is going to be my day off, or every Wednesday or whatever, or just like, you know what, I'm tired of smelling like chlorine day in and day out. So there is going to be a day when I rest, and it just means I walk the dog. When I was coaching a lot of athletes, the line that I would draw for their rest day is like, you should not need to take a shower. And, you know, everybody has their own personal hygiene standards. But, you know, if you're swimming, you're going to need to take a shower. It should be such an easy walk that you take with your dog or your toddler, where you wouldn't even need to rinse your body afterward. And you certainly should not need to wash your hair. Anything where you need to wash your hair, that is a workout. Unless you live in, I don't know, Phoenix or something, and it's just really hot out.
I love this. And Sage, I have to say, I forgot how much I adore you. So thank you. Thank you for being you.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start talking about some really specific ways to rest and recover. Although I guess maybe this qualifies as it, dynamic warm-ups. So I learned from a coach the value of them, but it kind of stopped doing them. And then I got very injured. I had two bulging discs and was out of running for a year, and saw a fabulous PT here in Portland, Amy Benton. And so she taught me this pre-run dynamic warm-up that's just four really easy exercises, barely takes longer than one Taylor Swift song. And yes, that's always what I listen to when I do them. And so that, but last night, I got to pickleball late. Or was cutting it a little close, and so didn't get to do my dynamic warm-up before league. And boy, I could feel it. Like, I was so creaky and limited in my motion for the first game or two. So what's your advice about warming up before a run or other athletic endeavor?
I think you should do it if it's working for you. And if this is part of the ritual, it's kind of like faith and ritual.
Oh, it sure is ritual.
In recovery. Yeah. That's getting your head into the right space to get out onto the court, then absolutely you should do it. But it's also good, like with any routine, to have kind of a short version and a long version. So while maybe you realize you feel your best when you do your routine to All Too Well extended edition, you could also
all too long.
have a shorter one, or even like, oh, I only have 30 seconds. What am I going to do? So that you aren't so tied to the ritual extended edition that you couldn't feel like, yeah, I could probably get by with less. And on the other hand, I think if people feel just fine easing into the run without any ritual exercises on the way in, that's fine too. And the harder you need to go off the bat, the more important the warm-up is going to be, quite clearly. So if you're running a marathon and your goal is to finish and you're going to be taking walk breaks, please don't go and do a 20 to 30 minute warm-up with strides and, you know, 5 minutes at race pace. There's no need for that. But if your goal is to run a particular pace, or you're racing a 5K or something shorter, 800 on the track, you better be warmed up for that one. So I think it's all dependent, but much of it is of the mental process as much as it is the physical process.
Okay, so let's talk about post-workout and just, you know, post like a regular run, not a race, but so post-workout and a cool down. Like, what are those first steps we should take after we get done with our, you know, regular daily run towards, you know, a good solid recovery?
For recovery, it's nice if you can have maybe 5 to 10 minutes of really light activity at the end, and that could be whatever you want. And the analogy I use here is like, at the end of your workday, you wouldn't unplug your computer from the wall, your desktop computer from the wall, and walk out of your office, right? That seems very abrupt. That said, you know, if there is a run where you were short on time and you really wanted to get your intervals in, and then you had to jump in the car and go get in the pickup line at school, that's fine. Like, don't worry about it. Your body knows what to do. Just like your computer is probably going to be totally fine, even if you unplug it from the wall. And sometimes it needs that hard reset, the computer does. But instead, you choose shut down from the menu, right? And then the computer goes about putting everything back where it belonged, and it does some kind of spin down. I'm not all too familiar with the inner workings of the computer, but I think you know what I'm talking about. Yes. You let it go through its processes. So taking some easy movement at the end, which might be doing a little bit of walking or whatever light stretching feels especially good to you, is just a nice way to let the systems clean themselves up and get ready to go into the recovery mode. And again, just like with the dynamic warm-up question that Sarah asked, a lot of this is also mental. It's like giving yourself a buffer. Okay, I had some goals in that workout. Ideally, I hit those goals in that workout. And now I'm giving myself this 5 to 10 minute buffer, thinking, all right, now I'm about to get ready to go back into the chaos of the rest of my life. And how am I going to show up? And maybe there were some tools that I honed in the workout that are going to apply in my life as well. So this liminal space between the workout itself and back to life, it can be a really important space mentally as well as physically. If you had a really long workout over 90 minutes or so, and you, especially if you weren't taking in calories along the way, you need to rehydrate and you may need to have some calories. You know, people put a whole lot of emphasis on the recovery snack, like there's a window that's going to slam closed if you don't eat, you know, adequate amounts of sugar and protein within 30 minutes after your workout. And it's not really a window that slams. It's a window that slowly rolls closed. So if your next meal is going to happen within the next hour or two, you're fine not worrying about taking in a particular snack, unless you're hungry, in which case, go for it. Mm-hmm. So that's also part of how you set yourself up better for recovery. It's just making sure you're eating well and well hydrated through the day. Mm-hmm. And that can be part of the cool down ritual as well.
Nice. Nice. So what are some of your favorite recovery tools?
My bed. My bed is my favorite recovery tool. It is. And, you know, if people had a little bit of money burning a hole in their pocket and were wondering where their money would be best spent on recovery, it is not on buying Normatec boots or Theragun. Sorry, Normatec. Sorry. Theragun, but it's probably on upgrading your bedroom situation. If your mattress is not perfect, like if you sleep better at a hotel than at home, you probably ought to upgrade your mattress. And if your room is not dark enough, you probably ought to get some blackout blinds. In fact, mine are getting delivered on Tuesday. I'm so excited. It's like good use of my book advance here. Yeah. So those are some easy and simple one-time things that you could spend your money on in order to upgrade your sleep. Even just like getting a nice set of sheets or some pajamas that sleep to the temperature that you prefer are all really good tools for recovery. Mm-hmm. So sleep, bed, number one. Food is probably the number two most important thing you can be doing for your recovery and just for your general health. So a consult with a sports nutritionist would be really useful. Or if you had slightly more money, meal prep or personal chef.
Now we're talking big money.
Yeah. I'll take it. Maybe getting a babysitter so that you can do the meal prep yourself, or, you know, it's all a question of making it work with your budget, but that would be very big bang for your buck. And also just good for your overall health and not just for your performance. And the third most important thing after sleep and nutrition that people can do for the recovery and just for their general health is to find ways to manage stress, to learn to say no to all the PTA questions and committee assignments, and to dial back your commitments so that you can rest a little bit better. And so to that end, a therapist is probably also a really good use of your money.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk foam rolling.
Sure.
Before exercise, after exercise, and for how long? Give us a few pointers, please.
Oh, whatever makes you happy is fine with me, but less is probably more here as well. The problem that I see, and, you know, I've taught a weekly class for 20 years now, yoga for athletes, yoga for athletic balance, and it's basically yoga for 55-year-old men who still run. And it is, and that's fine. I get it. The problem that I see, and I'm not calling out anybody by name here, but they think, oh, if a little bit of this is good, a whole lot of this is going to be better. And yeah, no pain, no gain. So I need to stretch really hard. I need to foam roll really hard. And I, you know, I need to have this whole routine that I go through every time. No, just do a little bit. And what I find, especially with these dudes, is they get on the roller, and it's not just the foam roller. It's like the titanium roller, right? That you pull out of the freezer. So right there, it's a little bit too hard and too cold anyway. And then if they find a sticky point, or what we sometimes call trigger points, then they'll just rail on it. And then you wind up having the exact opposite effect from what you wanted. Like, the idea is to relax and to prime your tissues for movement if you're doing it before, or to kind of ease into the rest of your day if you're doing it after. So if instead you're just kind of hitting yourself with this foam roller, that's not the point. The point is for it to feel good. So whatever routine makes you happy, just a few passes is really enough. Don't go on your IT band for 5 minutes. Go on your IT band for like 5 passes, and that's it. Because the foam roller, even if it is a soft and squishy foam roller, is a blunt instrument. You know, there's only so much that you can do with it. And I, full disclosure, I own not just a yoga studio, but also a spa. So I have a vested interest in telling people to get a massage, but get a massage. It's like, it's so much more specific to get manual therapy from a trained, experienced provider, especially somebody who knows athletes' bodies. You will get so much further there than just kind of flailing around on your foam roller.
Okay, so Sage, all 4 bro listeners that we have, they've now unsubscribed from our show. So so thanks for that, Sage.
You're welcome.
Okay, so you have mentioned, you know, the Theragun, and I sense I might know what the answer is, but maybe not. What's your stance on massage guns or percussive guns?
Yeah, less is more. I would sell it on eBay and get a real massage from a real person instead.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about physical recovery, but let's talk a little bit about mental recovery. So, you know, it is like mid-March, and some folks are coming up on racing season. Some folks may be running Boston or some other spring marathon, and you know, getting a little bit burned out on training, or, you know, the load, just even the load of everyday life and training. So help us think about mental recovery.
Yeah. One of the wonderful coaches that I talked to both times that I was working on this book on athletic recovery, both the first and the second edition, Kristen Diefenbach, gave me this awesome analogy. She said, what you're doing with your training is like trying to get the perfect toast on a marshmallow, right? So you need to hold it. Isn't that, you know where
that's
I'm going
great.
With this. I just love that she had this wonderful analogy. You need to get the marshmallow close enough to the fire to create some kind of, you know, chemical reaction, some kind of change, but you don't want to burn it to a crisp. And the sense of burnout happens like right at that moment, you know, where the marshmallow might burst into flame, but you can pull it back and blow on it, and it's still going to be a delicious s'more, you know, or just eat the marshmallow, you know. But the only way that you're ever going to get to peak performance is to get close enough to that burning to create the toast. And sometimes you realize you've gone a little bit too far, and it's not too late to yank it back. So if folks are feeling that kind of mental burnout, preemptively resting is about the best thing you can do. Like, you just got to move away from the flame, right? And that might mean making some notes in your journal for next season. Like, oh yeah, maybe I shouldn't have been an accountant who prepares people's taxes and also trying to run the Boston Marathon that same week.
True story. You
know? Yeah. Or even just do my own taxes that week. So it's hindsight is 20/20, but scaling your life so that it fits your goals, or better yet, scaling your athletic goals so that they fit your life, is something that should be happening better every time around the sun. So we learn from those lessons, and next time we start the marshmallow further back from the flame, and we approach the flame with a little bit more respect and a little bit more intentional rest.
We are going to leave people with that fabulous toasted marshmallow analogy, because that's mic drop. We're out.
See, it doesn't get better than Kristen's analogy. So it's time to walk away.
Thank you so much, Sage. And I encourage everybody to get a copy of The Athlete's Guide to Recovery. You are as wonderful in print as you are on podcasts and in real life. So thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
So Tish, are you going to do anything to revamp your rest and recovery?
Well, I'm just busy patting myself on the back for having never taken a nice bath.
Oh, see, I was all about it. I'm all about, you know, kind of outward signs of badassery. So
I think I tried to do one once. Like, I put a couple of ice cubes in the bathtub. I'm like, I am so not getting in that.
I do have to say, though, when she said it's a form of hazing, the person who really got me into ice baths was on an assignment for you, Tish, and a certain coach and Olympic medalist, Lynn Jennings, is the one who got me started taking. Yeah, so
I can see why that would entice you to try. Like, yeah, I would like to be like Lynn Jennings too.
Yes,
I get that.
Yes.
I totally get that.
Yeah. So, and I had to prove myself. You know, I always felt not worthy.
Yeah.
I couldn't maybe run as fast as she anticipated I would be able to, but gosh, I can sit in cold, icy water.
Just the best of them. How long do you sit in it, Lynn Jennings? I'm going to top that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Oh, like I said, I was reminded in that conversation how much I adore Sage, and she taught yoga for athletes at our first ever running retreat back in 2015. It's the first time I got to spend a lot of time with her. And so that's just an example of the types of experts and sessions we will have at our Lake Placid retreat. Not saying that Sage will be there, but equally excellent people will be, including we just added to the lineup a session on self-defense for runners. So that retreat is September 6th to 9th. I really hope you're going to join us in Lake Placid, New York, which is a charming Olympic village set in the Adirondack Mountains. Our host hotel is right on the small lake, small boat-free lake that's in town. And because the weather will still be warm and almost kind of summer-like, we're going to be able to go open water swimming. We'll, if you care to, we will be doing lots of running. There will be yoga, meals, expert sessions, fabulous party on the final night, and just loads of people with positive outlook on life that come together to celebrate running and go back smarter runners and people who value recovery. So anyway, join us in Lake Placid September 6th to 9th. Find out all the details and register by going to anothermotherrunner.com. Click on events, and there it is in the drop-down menu. Again, go to anothermotherrunner.com. Our podcast today was produced in St. Paul, Minnesota by Barry Madure from Fire on the Bluff. I do hate the smell of corned beef.
I don't like any of that. Oh, cabbage. Blech.